From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We begin today with the Big Ten, the college athletic conference that did at one point actually have 10 teams. But in 1990, it added Penn State from that noted Midwestern state of Pennsylvania. And that was just beginning of the conference's sort of reverse Horatio Alger, go east, young man. In recent years, the Big Ten has added East Coast schools in Rutgers and New Jersey and the University of Maryland, and pivoting back to the Great Plains, the University of Nebraska. Its Illinois schools are Northwestern, and of course the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where Illinois Public Media is based. We're talking about this because the Big Ten is now set to span the entire continent and become the Big 16, not by name, but by number, with the additions of the University of California, Los Angeles, and the University of Southern California, both located in the LA metropolitan area. This decision, set for 2024, is prompting questions about the future of the Big Ten and what this means for the athletes at these schools and college athletics in general. Joining us now to break down the decision is Mariah Guzman. She's a writer on the National News Desk for 24/7 Sports, which is part of CBS Sports. She's also an alum of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Mariah, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Excited to be on.
Also with us is Matt Brown, who's the publisher of the Extra Points newsletter and an alum of, checking my notes here, yes, the Ohio State University. Matt, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And last but certainly not least, we're also joined by David Palmer. He's an agency owner for Country Financial, and more to the point for our conversation, he played for the University of Iowa men's basketball team from 2005 to 2009. Today, he's based in Bloomington, Illinois. David, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me today.
Well, we're glad you're here. And listeners, if David Palmer's name sounds familiar, he was also recently a candidate for Congress in the 13th Congressional District Democratic primary. We want to hear from you today in our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or tweet us at 21st Show. What do you think about USC and UCLA? I'm going to get those acronyms right. Joining the Big Ten. Maybe you went to a Big Ten school. Maybe you're an alum of USC, UCLA. How do you feel about this shift? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. Mariah, I want to start with you. Let's just begin sort of with an overview. What is the Big Ten in 2022?
Well, there could be a lot of ways to answer that question. But I think, like, if we're just going to gear this towards a general audience that maybe doesn't know what the Big Ten is, you can look at it. It's one of the oldest college athletic conferences in the United States. So, and a lot of these conferences have different things to them. Like, you know, if we're looking at Pac-12, strong academics. With the Big Ten, you think of, you know, a major research universities, lots of financial endowments, and strong academics as well. So that's how you can look at the Big Ten. I don't think I need to name all of the teams, but if you need me to do that, I can do that as well.
There will not be a quiz. Let's talk about that, because the Pac-12 is where USC and UCLA are going to be leaving from. Talk a little bit more about that, because I think there, you know, more people in our listenership will be familiar with the Big Ten than the Pac-12, maybe.
Yeah, I think, well, the Pac-12 just consists of schools in that Western region. And so it's, you know, another, all these schools, all these, these are conferences all in the Power Five. When the Power Five are, you know, the five athletic conferences that are, you know, considered to be the elite ones in college athletics. So I think that's how you can look at Pac-12. I think the easiest way is just think of everything on the West Coast. And now I think that's what we're looking at with this shift and this addition of USC and UCLA moving to the Big Ten. Is everybody was thrown off geographically. They're like, well, wait, Pac-12 is supposed to be on that side and Big Ten is supposed to be in the Midwest and kind of a little shifted into the East Coast. Like, what are we doing here? So I think there were some confusions about that geographically, but I think everybody's gotten past that now, and we're kind of looking into the logistics of what this shift can kind of mean.
Matt, I want to bring you into the conversation. Why did USC, why do USC and UCLA want to move to the Big Ten?
The biggest reason, despite what anybody might say in public about this is about NIL or this is about preserving athletic opportunity, the biggest reason is overwhelmingly to maximize broadcast revenue. The Big Ten Conference is in a position to make more money from their tier one television rights negotiations than nearly anybody else because the Big Ten footprint contains lots of gigantic media centers. Big Ten institutions tend to have high enrollments, gigantic fan bases and fan bases that live all over the country, not just within the Big Ten, but in the South and in Los Angeles and in New York City and everywhere. So they're able to command a higher media rights valuation than a package centered around the West Coast or packaged around maybe large Great Plains institutions. By making this move, USC and UCLA are in a position to earn maybe more than $30 million more each year just from television than they would have remaining in the Pac-12. And that is money that could go towards improving some of their programs, that could go to start paying off lots of athletic department debt and putting them in a position to compete at a high level.
Yeah, wherever you are in the country, you can probably find a tribe to watch the Ohio State-Michigan game with, right, if those are your particular teams. So, Matt, the Big Ten Media Days just concluded, I understand. Did we learn anything new about this expansion?
Yeah, from Big Ten Media Days, you would hear that Commissioner Kevin Warren has indicated that the Big Ten wouldn't necessarily stop at 16 if the right institutions were made available. The one that's within our industry most commonly rumored is Notre Dame. Of course, right here in the Big Ten footprint, there's a long history of Notre Dame, will they, won't they, potentially joining, but also potentially other similar institutions on the West Coast, like the University of Washington in Seattle, the University of Oregon, potentially Stanford, and maybe even elsewhere. The idea that geography or historical rivalry or institutional similarities would now be the deciding factor for conference affiliation, I think at this point, you can really throw that out the window. It doesn't really matter if you've been playing somebody for 100 years. If you can make the math work with ESPN or Fox, the Big Ten, as well as other leagues, are willing to throw some of that into the wind.
Are there other leagues that are doing this, or not leagues, leagues is the wrong term. Are there other conferences that are having this sort of nationwide expansion?
Generally not out of wanting to play offense, right? There aren't a whole lot of other leagues. And quite frankly, I think leagues really is the correct term to use because okay. This is big time sports, even if it's technically amateur. It's rare to be able to have a conference that can spread nationwide and earn enough money from broadcast revenue to be able to handle all of the logistical burdens that come from this. If you're making $105 million a year from Fox, you could theoretically afford to charter almost all of your flights. If your television contract is more modest, you're in the 40s and 50s, that's a different conversation. But then you have to wonder, can I sell putting the volleyball team on JetBlue and having them have to take two or three different flights to get to state college? Can I lie in front of my regents with a straight face and say that this move is still for athlete empowerment? You sometimes see national conferences at lower levels, particularly for affiliate sports. The Big Sky Conference, for example, mostly competes with West Coast and mountain-based institutions. I think they have a golf team that's somewhere within the East Coast. You have this occasionally for tennis or for affiliate sports, but very generally, what the Big Ten is doing for everything, it's pretty rare.
All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the expansion of the Big Ten, which is currently 14 schools. It will be 16 beginning in 2 years with the addition of UCLA and USC to this, at one time, what was a Midwestern athletic conference. We're talking about this with Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, and Mariah Guzman, who writes for 24/7 Sports, which is part of CBS Sports, and David Palmer, who played for the University of Iowa men's basketball team from 2005 to 2009. David, what do you, as a former Big Ten athlete, what do you think of this expansion?
I think this is awesome. I think that it allows schools to open up their recruiting a little bit more. I think that you're going to start to see a better quality on the field and on the different, courts and different things like that. And so I think that this is going to be a really, really, really good thing for the Big Ten and just sports fans in general. I think it allows teams to kind of, not have to be perfect in football to get into things like the college football playoff, because now you're going to have such a powerful conference. And so this is going to be good for the Big Ten, in my opinion.
And what about the student athletes? I mean, you were somebody who yourself had to travel for games in the middle while also balancing a class load. Do you think athletes are going to be able to handle this sort of additional travel?
Absolutely. Like Matt kind of alluded to earlier, most of the teams in the Big Ten, and I'd be surprised if there's one who didn't, they're going to be flying, you know, chartered flights after games. They're going to be, you know, feeding the guys well on the planes. And so it's not going to be as, you know, tumultuous as people would imagine. You're not going to have a bunch of 16 guys trying to take red eye flights, you know, in the airport on commercial planes. And so I think that travel and everything is still going to be top notch for Big Ten universities. And so I don't think it'll be much of a hindrance to the performance.
Mariah, I wonder what your perspective is on that. I think that's certainly, I have no trouble believing that for certainly football and basketball, but I wonder once you get into like the gymnastics team or lacrosse, some of these schools have lacrosse or something like that. Do you think the universities are going to be chartering, you know, a flight on a Wednesday for the tennis team to go from Pennsylvania to California?
Yeah, so this is actually something that I thought of, and I know so many people thought of, because when this initial news dropped, right, everybody's eyes turned to the revenue sports, basketball and football, which makes sense. Those are the main drivers of financials for these schools and these programs. This is why they are Power Five schools. But, you know, this has also involved other schools as well. And so I think, like, for example, like there are some programs I think of in terms of just like performance, like, okay, what are we looking at? Because all sports except for beach volleyball, men's and women's polo will be full conference members. So everything besides those. So when you look at UCLA softball, I think that they could dominate in the Big Ten. I think that they have a great chance. They've had success and now moving into a different conference. But, you know, what changes with them is that the Big Ten will, like, selects its automatic NCAA qualifier through a conference tournament. So UCLA is going to have to play an additional postseason event before the beginning of the NCAA tournament. And then, you know, you look at UCLA women's basketball. I think they could actually see a positive shift in this conference realignment because, you know, they've been good, but they haven't moved into that super top tier that involves Stanford and Oregon and Arizona. And I think that they could be extremely competitive in the Big Ten compared to what the Big Ten women's basketball programs look at now. But another point that I like wanted to touch on with this was we look at the finances, and I think that what some of these programs and schools can think about doing is, okay, we can see how much more money this is driving in based on these revenue schools. And I would only hope that they would take an approach to say, hey, like, if we're driving in more money, if this expansion has been nothing but good for, you know, X, Y, and Z programs, what can we do for these other programs? And I think it would be a chance for them to really invest more, especially into the women's sports or even into the smaller programs, because I fear that if they don't pay more attention to investing more and providing more into those programs, and we just focus on the big picture with football and basketball, I think a lot of these smaller programs can end up hurting as time goes on further along the road.
Interesting. We need to take a break in a couple of minutes. But Matt, before we do, I do want to just stay on this idea of how this affects the students, particularly from an academic standpoint. Do you see potential downstream effects for the student athletes' academics?
Unquestionably. So this kind of thing really is my beat at Extra Points. And we've recently shared peer-reviewed research that came out of Bowling Green University that interviewed a lot of athletes that had to travel cross country repeatedly for their sports. A lot of hockey athletes have to do this. Some football players do. And outside of the largest institutions for football and men's and women's basketball, you generally don't travel with academic advisors. You have to miss class time, which is a significant burden during the season when you have to make a lot of these particular trips. And I think it's also important to remember here that not all travel is equal. one of the things that's going to be different about adding two schools in Los Angeles now, particularly for those athletes, is they're not having to travel multiple time zones to play a lot of their games within EST. And that isn't just being in an airplane to move 2,500 miles, 3,000 miles. That's completely changing your ability to acclimate. And NCAA regulations, you know, right now don't make it possible to just hang out on the East Coast for 2 weeks and take all your classes remotely. I think, you know, college football fans might remember a few years ago when a very highly regarded Stanford team came and lost to a relatively underwhelming Northwestern squad at the beginning of the season. And the idea of body clocks being a part of that became a little bit of a meme within the college football fan community, but it's true. And it's not something that happens on a regular basis right now within the Big Ten to have to go from Pacific to Eastern to Central on a regular basis. That's going to be a part of it. That there's not only an academic impact to that, there's a literal athletic performance that goes with that as well.
Absolutely. Jet lag. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, what do you think of the USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten? It was once a Midwestern conference. Now it spans the entire continent from coast to coast. 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. More to come. Stay tuned. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the expansion of the Big Ten to include the two Los Angeles area schools of UCLA and USC. It's going to go from 14 teams to 16 teams, spanning from New Jersey and Maryland through, of course, its traditional base in the Midwest, through Nebraska and then again to California. We're talking about this with Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, Mariah Guzman, who is a writer for 24/7 Sports, part of CBS Sports, and David Palmer, who is a former Iowa men's basketball player from 2005 to 2009, now based in Bloomington, Illinois, where he owns an agency affiliated with Country Financial. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Matt, I want to stay with this idea. We were talking before the break about academics and the idea of virtual schooling. You said it's not possible to just set a team up, not in their home region for 2 weeks and have them go virtual. I wonder, would this sort of expansion, I mean, because that's something I wondered about. Would these athletes basically have to move to remote education? And would this sort of expansion even been possible before the pandemic when we had this explosion of remote learning?
That is a great point. And this is something that I've heard from some faculty academic representatives and from some others that are involved on the operational side of college athletics who have raised that exact point, saying, you know, maybe 5 years ago, the idea of significant distance learning would be, you know, controversial, but we almost everyone in this footprint did it extensively over COVID. So perhaps we can do that a little bit more. If you are an institution like an Illinois or an Iowa or an Ohio State, where you have more resources and more structure to help train instructors on how to best do this, you know, perhaps and all kinds of academic support specialists to throw at your athletes, this becomes more doable. It's not uncommon for athletes, even that aren't traveling cross country, to take distance learning classes or to take classes where they're not going to be in the classroom every single time over the term during the season, because even conventional travel means you have to miss class time. But this, you know, along with what the Big 12 looks like and maybe some other leagues, as we head into an, you know, more NCAA conventions and rulemaking changes, which are happening at the same time of all of these big realignment changes, perhaps that's something that's revisited. And it may be easier for a UCLA or an Ohio State to pull off. It will be much more challenging for a Southern Illinois or a SIUE or Eastern Illinois to be able to pull off the same way.
David, I want to ask you about that, and I should make a correction. I keep saying Bloomington. I don't know what got into my head. You are based in Champaign-Urbana, so apologies for that mistake. But what
no
about
problem.
What about the academics here? What do you think that this is going to potentially, you know, require a change in the rules and the way college athletes take their classes?
I think that should be an option. I think, you know, whenever you give, you know, coaches and athletic directors flexibility to better, you know, serve their teams and student athletes, I think that that's always a positive. me personally, I don't think that I, you know, suffered a ton academically with the schedule, but my schedule back then was a lot different, right? It was the traditional, I think it was an 11 or 12 team Big Ten league then, and everybody was centrally based here in the Midwest. And so, you know, I do remember though that when we had to play tournaments, you know, we had one in the Virgin Islands and places like that. It is a little bit of a different scenario where you have to, you know, go to big conference rooms as a team and do study hall and things like that. And Matt was exactly right. We usually travel with an academic professional to kind of help us navigate some of our challenges that we will have on the road. But yeah, I think the NCAA should make it much easier for teams to have flexibility so they can make student athletes a lot more comfortable, and especially in regards to their academic life.
Mariah, I want to ask you about, we've been talking about the students. What about the coaches? I mentioned earlier that the Big Ten media days concluded. We saw a tweet from Zan Bando on Twitter, tweet on Twitter, of course, it was on Twitter, that there were mixed feelings among the coaches. Can you talk about that, particularly Illinois' Brett Bielema and Northwestern's Pat Fitzgerald?
So in terms of coaches, I haven't seen any direct quotes from the two of those. So I couldn't fully answer that right there. But I think like a lot, I mean, I remember seeing Brad Underwood talk about, you know, the idea of the expansion and, you know, potentially it being even more. And Underwood, you know, like said, you know, the more the merrier. And so from my perspective, that's kind of a lot of what I had seen. And I think right now what these teams can look at and these coaches can look at is maybe the positive aspect of the recruiting front. Like, I think that is something that is going to positively impact these Big Ten schools. So like, you know, the Big Ten has consistently had a team in college football playoff contention, right? Not many Pac-12 teams have been in that contention. So when you're going on the recruiting end and you're recruiting, say, a top recruit in LA, well, now the Big Ten's got that LA market. So, you know, whoever can come over, you know, Michigan can say, hey, well, you might be out of state, you might be out of your home state, but you'll get to play some games at home, or your family won't have to travel so far whenever we get to play in California. So I think that's like a positive outlook that some of these coaches can have good perspective on. I think the recruiting is going to dramatically improve with having this LA market in mind.
And Mariah, I also wanted to ask you just about Illinois schools in general. I mean, they're, you know, the U of I in particular has had individual teams do well here and there over the years, but it's not, I don't think it's really known as the powerhouse of a Big Ten. Do you see specific downstream effects for Illinois schools, Northwestern and the U of I in particular, relating to this expansion?
The first thing that I thought of was, what does this mean for, you know, Illinois basketball? I'm not saying that there's going to be this dramatic decline or anything, but when you add in a school like UCLA with that high level of competition, I just wonder what that means in terms of getting them involved and in the mix. Because when we looked at Big Ten basketball, you had, you know, your Illinois and your Iowa, and I'm completely blanking on your other team, you know, your Michigan. And now I'm like, okay, well, UCLA is knocking one of those teams out. And is Illinois going to be one of them if they can't stay strong after losing X amount of guys over these past few years? And in terms of, I don't see this affecting football that much either. So, yeah, I'm losing my train of thought, but you know,
no,
adds
that's good.
More,
that's good. No,
I think
that's
it
good.
Adds more depth to an already deep conference, these additions. So,
for better or worse, I guess. Matt, I want to come back to you. What about the political implications here? I saw where California Governor Gavin Newsom not too happy about UCLA switching. What's going on there?
This is a great question. It's something I don't think has been really discussed a whole lot nationwide. One of the interesting wrinkles about all of this is California state law right now prohibits state-funded travel for state employees to like a third of the country right now, which includes multiple current Big Ten states, states like Ohio and Indiana and Iowa. And I would imagine Nebraska will eventually be added to that. You have that ban because California wants to demonstrate their displeasure with some of the LGBTQ community-based bills in some of these other red states. Well, you can't really get around UCLA employees now traveling to Big Ten. I mean, the NCAA is headquartered in Indiana. You know, you're gonna be playing these games. So what this literally means is that before any of these road trips, by state law, you know, UCLA's coaches have to be able to say, hey, athletes, if you're uncomfortable going to these places, we can't penalize you for not going. Theoretically, any assistant coach or DOBO, which is a director of operations or other staffer, can't be required to go. And that travel must be paid for through non-state funds. And given how UCLA's athletic department is funded, that's not really a big deal. That's a much bigger issue for a Cal State Northridge or a Long Beach or anything rather than a big department like UCLA. But that is a wrinkle. There's also, as you had mentioned, some local political tension here as well, given that UCLA is part of the University of California system, which includes Berkeley, which is an institution right now that whose athletic department is in substantial debt after a stadium renovation. UCLA leaving would presumably make Cal's Pac-12 or whatever league they're in, their television deal worth less money, which then makes it more difficult for them to pay back that debt. That becomes a risk to bondholders, which might include the rest of the University of California system. I have not spoken to any California political expert. We wrote about this on Extra Points last week that believes the state could actually keep UCLA from leaving, but there could be some unpleasant public and adversarial hearings. And I think people at UCLA right now that are depending on staying in the good graces of Sacramento to be funded, they have to know they're on the governor's crap list right now.
Wow. So many political and other downstream effects from this. It's fascinating. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the expansion of the Big Ten to include USC and UCLA, which is set for 2024. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. We're speaking with Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, Mariah Guzman, national news desk writer with 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports and a U of I alum, and David Palmer, who is presently an agency owner for Country Financial based in Champaign-Urbana, but more to the point for our conversation, played for the U of Iowa, the other U of I, the University of Iowa men's basketball program from 2005 to 2009. David, what do you think about the culture of the Big Ten? Do you see a potential change there with the addition of these California schools?
I do think that some of that will be lost. You know, when I was in school, we spent a lot of time in the summer on other people's campus. Just, you know, if you have friends who are in Champaign, you would come to Champaign. You know, we would go to Columbus. I mean, we drove all over the Big Ten just to hang out, just because, you know, we had so many friends from the AAU circuit and different things like that. And I do think a lot of those guys are going to come into college already being familiar with each other already. I just think that now the travel is going to be a lot harder to do, but I think it'll be fine with social media and things like that.
Do you see any rivalries between USC and UCLA in any Big Ten schools, or we're going to have to force?
I could imagine a USC Ohio State football game having a lot of implications to it. You know, I think that those two schools are probably saw each other. Well, and USC Michigan probably saw each other a lot too, and like Rose Bowls and things like that. And so I imagine, you know, fans will bring a lot of energy to those games from, you know, I guess old losses to different teams and being able to kind of, you know, play those teams on a more regular basis. Now, I think that they will bring a lot more energy to the league.
Matt, your former Vox colleague, Jane Coatson, who now writes for The New York Times, wrote a piece about this expansion and actually quoted you quite a bit in there. But she talked about this idea that you meet somebody from a Big Ten school, you feel like you know something about them, for those of us who went to Big Ten schools. Do you see that sort of idea of what it means to have gone to a Big Ten school? Is that changing? Is that going away in the future?
That's a great point. And I think there is something to that. You know, one of the kind of fascinating dynamics over the past couple of years as Rutgers and Maryland and Nebraska have become integrated to this league. And as fans, because I travel to those campuses and get to know people in those communities, on one hand, you get to see that, wow, maybe there's some similarities here that I didn't understand, right? Like I used to, when I was at Vox, I worked there for a long time. I lived very close to College Park and I went to that campus and went, oh my gosh, University of Maryland, there's a cow here. There's a dairy. This is secretly a Big Ten institution. Nobody told me this was an ag school, right? And there's a little bit of that. But, you know, to kind of piggyback off of what David was just saying there, one of the things that has made this conference right now an attractive commercial property and also one that fans really want to be invested in is because chances are there's somebody else in your community in real life that is affiliated with one of those schools. Like I'm based in Chicago and I know on my street, I'm going to see Purdue and Michigan State and Iowa flags. And if I go to church or if I go to any other place, there's going to be other Big Ten people there. And when I think about some of the most passionate, explosive, fascinating collegiate rivalries, like the Egg Bowl between Mississippi and Mississippi State, the Holy War between BYU and Utah, Iowa, Iowa State, the colloquial term for that is something I don't think I could say on an FCC regulated station, but big rivalry. these are places where you have geographic proximity and class differences and religion differences, and it all plays out in real life all the time. And I think what's going to be a challenge in the beginning of this, you know, who knows what things look like on the field in a decade or so, but most people, if you live in the Midwest, you probably don't know somebody that went to USC. You may not know somebody that went to UCLA. You might not know about their cultural foibles or their history. And it takes a long time for those rivalries to organically build up. They can happen, but it's simply not the same as you know that you're going to be able to find somebody at the IGA that you can make fun of because of what happened on Saturday.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's somebody I listen to on a national financial podcast who talks about her Michigan fandom, and I feel like we have something in common, even though I obviously never met her. Look, we only have about a minute left, and we have a caller who just called in, Steve from Woodford County. If you can speak quickly, Steve, thank you for calling in. What did you want to say?
So my comment regards the core problem of big money in sports, and I think it has led to the transfer portal for athletes, the expansion of athletic conferences. And my perspective is, I think, fairly unique. One of my sons ran cross country and track for Illinois. The other attended U.S. Military Academy and ran cross country and track there. And they truly are student athletes. Mm-hmm. That has led me to the conclusion that the real way to get rid of big money in sports and these conference issues, the transfer portals, all those other types of things, is to make everyone a student athlete, no scholarships whatsoever. If people can go to a military academy and its rigorous academic schedule and graduate and perform in sports, athletes from all over the country should be able to do that at any school.
All right, Steve, thank you for the call. And unfortunately, that is going to have to be our last comment on this. Interesting thought. We're going to have to take that up another time, though. I want to thank Matt Brown from the Extra Points newsletter, Mariah Guzman from 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports, and David Palmer of Country Financial and also the University of Iowa men's basketball program. Thank you all so much for being with us to talk about this today on the 21st Show. Coming up after a short break, the James R. Thompson Center is going to be taken over by Google. What are they going to call it? That's one of the questions we'll be posing to John Pletz with Crain's Chicago Business, who is going to be joining us to talk about what that sale means. Stay with us.